CNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagland, Corey Majors, Reginald Atatula. Mike Bassick is on assignment this week doing that TV thing for the Texas Rangers. If you guys have any suggestions for guests or perhaps guest co-hosts.
Mike Bassick.
You, besides Mike Bassick.
Oh, my bad.
He has made his thoughts about that very clear. That you would like to have on at some point this week, let us know. FrankelFirm.com text line 877-881-1053. Gentlemen, it's the two greatest words in all of sports. Game 7. Let's go ahead and fire off that cut number 6 because, well, by now you should probably know who won.
Here's Hanifin. Far side shot.
Now, quick question to start this off. Were you watching the clock, or were you watching the clock and also listening to hear the so you really knew that the game was over?
You mean right there at the end?
Yes. Whenever?
I was. So it felt like from seconds 45 to 36. Wasn't around 36 when Otter made that stop? Something around there.
The glove save?
It felt like an hour. That 15 seconds felt like forever. So, Kevin,
did you get mad when the Stars called a timeout too? You're like, come on.
I'm pretty okay with everything that DeBoer does in Game 7. So
that's a good point.
But the next thing was like for the last 30 seconds, I just didn't look at the clock. I was like, I'm not going to look at the clock because that looked like it took too long. So I just kind of let it ride out, and yeah, like you said, waited for everybody to just stop playing. And when everybody stopped playing and they said it was over, I literally looked down and was like, oh, the time's off the clock. It was awesome, dude. It was awesome to not be constrained by a clock, Kevin. To not feel like every second I'm just looking and waiting for what time is about to happen.
I think I was more excited that the Stars won as opposed
I'll
to
see you later, Kevin.
What is happening right now? Oh, my gosh. Corey is leaving because RJ came in. I'm not entirely sure what. Oh, because he has taken a bucket of food?
Yeah.
Can that wait till the commercial break,
no.
Perhaps?
Let me ask the Twitch. We'll ask the Twitch and the Twolos out there and the Tolos. Do you want me to continue to do the show without food? Or do you want me to enjoy these amazing breakfast burritos that Tolo Timothy brought in?
I want you to enjoy one breakfast burrito so that the rest of us can also have breakfast burritos.
Ooh, and you would also like him to enjoy it in the break, right?
Absolutely.
I didn't hear what Reggie said. I didn't have my earbuds in, Kevin. I was not prepared.
He
my
said
apologies.
You can eat one of them.
All right. I just want one. That's
okay.
All I want. I'm not going to eat more than one, Kevin.
All right.
Why are you cutting into the Stars' time right now?
Exactly.
Oh, my apologies.
That's a good point.
My apologies.
Man. Radek Fox makes his return to the lineup. And Ty Dellandrea is going to be out. Holy crap. What an impact. We'll probably play this again because it's awesome. Well, let's go ahead and go to number 5. Just in case you didn't know, here is one of the impacts that Foxa had.
Here's Frank Smith back out for Foxa. Backhand shot! Score!
Now, that made me feel a heck of a lot better because we've talked about this again and again and again throughout the postseason. First 2 minutes, last 2 minutes of a period. It feels like it gives you a different level of control, and especially when the game is tied, especially in Game 7, when you get that goal in the first minute, 45 seconds, to take control of the game back. I thought, obviously, I'm not going to be like, oh, that was a huge goal. Well, duh, it was the game
winner.
It was
a big goal there.
But it definitely had a huge impact on, I felt like, momentum, the noise in the building, and on and on and on and on.
The Kevin, the beginning of the story on ESPN from the AP, Radek Foxa made a promise to his 2.5-year-old son when they were playing together before the Stars took the ice. Foxa indeed scored in his return. So he told his kid he was going to score, and then he does on something.
Is that why he was so pumped?
Yeah.
Well,
obviously because, you know.
Because he's being a good father,
yeah,
clearly.
Yeah, exactly.
This has been a weekend of great fathering. Shout out to Radek Foxa.
And so that was one of those moments, Kevin, where I was like, man, that's awesome. I screamed in the house and everything. But then whenever they went to show the replay, and you see that the dude didn't even look at the net, never saw the net, just flipped it behind him, and it goes in the only place that it could have gone to score that goal specifically. That was amazing, man. That was awesome.
Look, we talk about it sometimes, and I know the Stars at times default to, or have defaulted in the past to, how can we make this look like a pretty goal, when sometimes you're like, just fire crap up against the net. You never know what the hell could happen. And this was an example. Now, an update on the breakfast burrito situation from the 817. I think you should all do this segment while eating breakfast burritos.
Thank you.
I think everyone listening right now should try to get a breakfast burrito.
That's wonderful. I'm a huge fan of breakfast tacos and breakfast burritos anyway. Like, this is when I wake up in the morning on Saturdays and Sundays, first thing I'm thinking is, how do I get breakfast tacos?
Is that because the Stars won, or just because breakfast burritos are awesome?
Because they're awesome. Oh. Yeah.
Now, I have
a little pocket of amazing food.
I have a stat for you that I have complex feelings about.
Okay.
This is per NHL stats. So, you know, I'm going to take it as being valid. Dallas became the second team in NHL history to win a best-of-seven series against the reigning champions after losing each of the first two games at home. The only other time it happened was when Colorado defeated Detroit in 1999 in the conference semifinals. Now, here's why I have complicated feelings about that. Because in the very next round, Colorado Avalanche lost.
To whom?
That seems like it sets a bad precedent. But they lost to the eventual Stanley Cup champion Dallas Stars.
Oh.
And did you also know? We'll dive into this more and more tomorrow when we start talking about the Avalanche series. Did you know every time the Stars have made it to the Stanley Cup final, they've played the Avalanche in the playoffs?
Really? So every single time?
Every time. All three times. Well,
so we need
hopefully all four
we need
times.
But we've only won one cup.
Well, yeah, but we beat the Avalanche in all of these isolated 3 years I'm talking about.
Or one and
about.
Two, right? In the
that is
Stanley
correct.
Cup final.
Stupid Lightning and Devils.
So yeah, Kevin, I don't want to always have to play Colorado.
Well, that's the situation you're in right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to this year.
Here's the good news.
This is amazing, by the way.
If you can advance, okay, by the way, people from the 972, are my texts going through? I just bought a breakfast burrito.
Nice.
Yes. From the, oh my God, that's a great idea. From the 951, I got a taquito with y'all. And from the 432, can this segment now be called Best Buds and Burritos?
Yes.
That is a fantastic idea that you have helped facilitate for us today.
Yes.
Now, I might have forgot the other point that I was going to make.
It's okay.
Oh, here we go.
Nice.
This series is clutch because you almost know for sure you're going to win in the conference finals, right? Because the conference finals, you're going to play a Canadian team. And what have we established?
They don't win the Stanley
they
Cup.
They do not win the Stanley
Cup. Do
they
make it to the Stanley Cup
Occasionally
final?
They do.
Okay.
But they end up losing.
All right. How much of the season, Kevin, have the Stars looked like the best team? The season, not just the playoffs here.
Most of the second half of the season, okay. I think they've looked like the best team in the NHL.
And then...
Or one of the best two or three.
Adding Tanev was a fantastic piece. Like, the more I watch that, the more I go, man, that was a great addition.
How many times did you hear his name in the last even like 6 minutes? Now, one time, did you hear his name because they couldn't clear the puck out? And yes,
yeah.
We talked about this before the show, Reggie. I don't know if you felt this way. Time feels like it inherently slows down when you're waiting for the result that you want to stay put, right?
That's a theory of relativity.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then on the flip side, the clock's going way too fast. You're like, I don't have enough time to come back. Corey said the Stars look like the better team yesterday. And I said, definitely, except for the 4 to 5 minute period. It was about 6 or 7 minutes left in the third period till about 2 minutes left in the third period, where it felt like you are in a perpetual shorthanded situation.
Yes.
Even though you weren't, even though Vegas had not taken their goalie out, the Stars had a really tough time clearing the puck out, and it felt like this is going to cost us. But I thought Tanev came up big a couple of different times in that run.
How much of that feels like just the mentality shift in the game when it feels like you go from playing like open ice hockey of just we're still trying to score to, okay, we're getting close enough to the time where we just got to batten down the hatches and try and make it through, and then you kind of invite more pressure upon yourself.
And that makes sense, right? Because if you see an opportunity, let's say a 50-50 puck is out there and you can make a break and you're like, man, if I can take this, especially if I can go like, let's say on the right edge, depending on which way the puck was going, I can have a one-on-one versus the goalie. But what if you don't get that, and by the time you turn around, now they have an advantage going the other way, and you didn't even really need to score that goal. You just needed to keep the puck. So I understand you probably hesitate just a little bit where, like, your hockey instincts are like, go, 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 go. But then your game instincts are like, no, we gotta stay back here.
That's where, and that's another thing too. Somebody was messaged this morning, was like, hey man, was that not the loudest like you've ever heard the crowd in the American Airlines Center? I was there for Game 5 of the NBA Finals when the Mavs won. That's the loudest I've personally ever heard it before. Okay, when the Mavs won the title, I was in there, and that place was going nuts. And even our boy Sean Heath, the Mavs PA guy, he was like, this room is perfect. I don't have to do anything. They're doing it all for me. And so that's the loudest I've ever heard it. Friday night's crowd at the AAC seemed like it was pretty crazy too. Reggie can attest to that because he was there. But what I love the most about the crowd, Kevin, in this game specifically, was they were smart loud.
Like, that's a great point.
Whenever guys poured it out there and then they had a shift and they did their job the right way, they were cheering the line change. And you're just like, hell yeah, that's what I'm talking about. When big things happen, those fans knew what the right reaction. When big hits happen, they knew the right reaction. It was a smart Stars fan base in that AAC yesterday, and I loved it, man. That's the thing I loved the most, because after, like you just said, that 4 to 6 minute window, when that got done and they find, like, they cleared it, and you could see them, they're exhausted and they're skating off the ice. That crowd's going nuts for them, and they're like, I can't wait to get back out there and do it again.
And you know what? The Stars have had an interesting, and you saw it play out exactly as it has throughout the rest of the series. Stars had a really interesting defensive philosophy throughout this series in terms of they really only played 5 defensemen. Now, I know realistically they played 6, but I saw this number going in, and you saw it replicated almost yesterday, is Nils Lundqvist had been playing less than 5 minutes a game. Yesterday, he played 3 minutes and 9 seconds, and what they've been doing is obviously you've seen an uptick in time for Tanev and Miro, which makes sense because you could make a very, very strong, probably factual argument that those are the two guys that you would want to lean on the most. And then I just saw this stat from the 469. I hope this is accurate. I have not seen this statistic, but I'm going to take the Tolo's word for it this morning. Tanev played 93 minutes against their top 2 lines in the series. The Stars had a 5-0 advantage with him on those lines.
I love it.
And
I love it.
That makes sense to me because you don't always see the fruits of your labor when it comes to the trade that you made. You saw this straight away. You saw it in the series. Like, I don't know, you might say Wyatt Johnston keeps scoring. You might say Jake Oettinger just keeps being badass, but this feels like a series that you could see the immediate impact of Chris Tanev and why you're moving on to the second round.
Yeah, man. And Kevin, I know you're a big fan of Wyatt's here in DFW.
Yes.
That kid is unbelievable.
That shot below the glove was, I mean, pinpoint. I mean, on the broadcast, they were calling it a dart, and I don't know that there's a better description of it.
Yeah.
Because, I found that to be incredible. From distance, finding that spot, especially as we were complaining, or not necessarily complaining, but talking about all series, like, just put shots on net. That wasn't just a shot on net. That was a very, very precise goal, and to do that at his age with this particular level of pressure, I thought was incredible.
I like the line. I always love the line. Razor's amazing, by the way. I just want to point that out. If you're watching him and you hear him, like, he's fantastic. And just all the terms that he has, all the hockey terms that he has, but then he'll throw out the words like Macedonian effort, and you're just like, that dude's just amazing. But yeah, he used the line, he put that one on a wire, and that's what that shot, Reggie, that's what that looked like to me. Was it looked like it just hung it on a wire and said, all right, send it right here. It was an entirely fun series. And Kevin, 2 things.
But wait, can we stick on Wyatt for just one second?
Yeah.
Because Jake Oettinger has now given me my favorite quote of the postseason. And sorry, I didn't ask for this audio. I didn't think of it. I just, when I was watching it, I was like, that is hilarious. Wyatt Johnston in the last 5 games, 4 goals, 6 total points, obviously huge. They asked Jake Oettinger after the game, does Wyatt Johnston ever get nervous? And of course they brought up like, oh, he can't even legally drink a beer. That's sweet. Does he ever get nervous? And Oettinger just quickly deadpans and he goes, yeah, maybe a little bit on the golf course. And so I liked that in that moment of, Holy crap, we just finished game seven as a one-goal game. It was tied, big chunk of the game, and oh my gosh, they just barraged me with shots. He's like, yeah, you should see him on the golf course, though. He gets a little wobbly there.
I'm glad you brought up Ottinger there, too, Kevin, because my favorite moment of the night was he gets the penalty for the terrible call, which I thought was terrible, but he gets a penalty for interference, and he's kind of looking at the ref like, really? And he's talking to him as the conversation. And then as they finish out that that power play or that shorthanded, there's a shot right on goal and he snags it and then throws the puck at the referee and skates off the ice to go get some water. And I was just like, that was so cold. That was like, just the way he responded to that was just like, boom, gotcha. Now what? And he went on. And so, and then just a few minutes later, you hear my favorite line of the night, which was, the Knights are trying, but there are too many Stars players in the way. They felt like they were a swarm defensively last night. I love it, man. It's great.
It really was awesome. And Corey, I know this has been one of your dream places to go, so I think you're going to love this text from the 318. Just moved over from Shreveport. My family has season tickets to LSU football games, so I've been in many intense environments. Yesterday was my first ever Stars game since moving here. That atmosphere rivaled many LSU football games in intensity.
Saturday night in Metairie, like I've heard there's nothing better. Nothing better. Is it not Metairie? Is that not where their stadium is? Am I wrong about this?
What, LSU?
Yeah.
Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge, that's what I meant.
Yeah, you're just New Orleans down, aren't you? As
he takes of the burrito.
A giant
yeah,
bite
it's because of the burrito.
So good.
And now you get to play Colorado, so who Lord knows you have a very lengthy playoff history with.
That was such a good burrito, Kevin. I mean,
an even
amazing.
Better series, right?
I'm glad to
an
hear.
Even better series. Thank you, Reggie.
You're welcome.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through the Fan. Coming up next, the Mavs advance and Jason Kidd gets a contract extension. How are we feeling on this busy morning? We'll do it next right here on the Fan.
17 offensive rebounds for the Dallas Mavericks. Irving dancing, prancing, pulls up, three-pointer.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 through the Fan. Now, there's a lot going on with the Mavs. Do you love the bang?
I want to talk specifically about that play, if we can, real
sure.
quick. Did you see Daniel Gafford in the background on
no.
that play? Watch the video.
Me neither.
It's the angle from, it would be the other side of the court down the side. And you first see him recognize, oh, he shook him once. And then he starts the, oh, no, not again. Don't do it to him again. You can see they did the still shots, too. Somebody did four still shots of all the faces of Daniel Gafford during that play when he just shook P.J. Tucker to his grave.
He had genuine concern for Pops Jr.
Oh, my gosh. It was so – and just watching Daniel Gafford's face is the best part. And then, I mean, obviously the basket goes in and everything, but
– so, like, Daniel Gafford was over there like, that's elder abuse. What are you doing?
It kind of was one of those really great moments. So, oh, no, don't do it to him again. I could see it in his mind. It was great.
Man,
I don't know why that's Daniel Gafford's voice in my brain, but that was
what I
was.
I mean, we've had him on the show. You have a decent idea of what he sounds like.
Yeah, my bad.
So the Mavericks win game six. They advance. They start tomorrow against Oklahoma City. By the way, at pretty much the exact same time as the Stars. We'll probably dive.
What the F is this all about?
Yeah, I don't like this. I think we need to go back to the every other night circumstance.
Yeah.
We'll dive into that probably tomorrow because for the first five games, they play on the same night, but then if the series extends out to 6 and 7, it's game for four straight days. So if you
I
got
don't know if
two
my emotions can handle it.
I mean, especially if you get 2 7-game series. And so you would think, like, hey, we're going to talk about Kyrie. Hey, we're going to talk about the Mavs closing it out. Let's start talking about OKC. But then over the weekend, and obviously we saw this come to fruition today, over the weekend, Mark Stein, who, you know, feels like he's just about as plugged into the Mavs
absolutely,
as a
yes.
human being can be. He reported on his Substack that Kidd had been linked to the head coaching job of the Lakers, partially because obviously they have history together, and that Kidd would likely receive a contract extension from the Mavericks in the, quote, near future. That near future is today, as it was announced that the Dallas Mavericks have signed Jason Kidd to a multi-year extension. And now this is one of the things where maybe it was going to happen anyway. They just advanced in the playoffs, and it was like, hey, we feel like we got good momentum, especially now we gave you the pieces that you needed. But it's interesting how things that seem like they have nothing to do with you absolutely make an impact, because I realize it was a disaster of a season. But if the Lakers hadn't fired Darvin Ham, would we just be in the thing where the Mavericks would still continue to be talking with Jason Kidd? I don't think he would have announced a contract extension this morning. That's just me. I could be totally off base about that. I think he was going to stay either way. But now you get a multi-year contract extension. I know we need to talk about the Clippers game as well. But how do you guys feel? How do Mavs fans feel about Jason Kidd? Because Jason Kidd has become a polarizing figure around here in terms of, some people are like, no, no, you watch some of the amazing in-game adjustments he makes and you see why he's valuable, or the way he communicates with Kyrie and Luka or whatever else. And then there's other people who think that the Mavericks win in spite of him.
So I don't know. I don't know that. But we kind of also were told that coaches now are have to be different than ever before, in that they it's more management of personalities and all that stuff. And I think there's a something to be said about the Phil Jacksons, who could draw up a good play but also understood how to manage big time personalities. Pop for a long time had really good low-key personalities that he managed, but he could call a good game. So everybody's different in that respect. But when it comes to the way that Jason Kidd's done it, they were abysmal in the first half of the season.
Agreed.
They couldn't stop anybody, and I guess that's just the nature of the game now, and that the regular season is what it is. We get tough during playoff time, or I guess after the All-Star break. But that part of, they were that bad, but maybe they had to be that bad in order to pull off the kind of trades that they pulled off, because they needed talent too. We were asking Jason Kidd to, look, you got two superstars. And I know your role players are not really like exceptional role players, but you have two superstars. You should be doing better. And then they get better players, and guess what happens? They're a better basketball team. They get guys who buy in defensively, and they look like one of the, I mean, a top team defensively that can put the clamps on you at any point. So Jason Kidd, he got the talent he needed, and now he's in a situation that puts him in a really good place for a long time, especially with Gafford, PJ Washington, and Luka, their contracts putting them here together for a bit. And Kyrie, too. Yeah, and Lively.
While all being relatively young, I mean, outside of Kyrie.
Yeah.
But I think the tough thing about Jason Kidd is also there is – he has kind of a laissez-faire approach to the regular season.
Fair.
And his bedside manner does not help that either, because the way that he talks to us generally, whether it's the fans or the media – is a place where he's like, I'm not concerned about what y'all think, which, I mean, in a way he shouldn't be, but also absolutely you should, right? You're like, you are the connector for us to this team. But the way that he handles this and approaches the regular season is, I'm going to let these guys figure things out. And then when we come to the playoffs, we'll get to this place. And that can be frustrating. However, there's been 2 out of 3 seasons where that approach has allowed his teams to be stronger once they get to the postseason and be able to manage these things. And so, it's a results-oriented business, and right now the results look very good when it comes to his approach. It could just be a little it could be a little frustrating to go through, and so I'm interested, just like I think you are, in how Mavs Nation feels about this, because there's a lot of times where Jason Kidd will say something or do something, or maybe more accurately, not do something, and it can really upset the fan base. But ultimately, you get to this time of year, and one of the things I talked about all through the Clipper series, the process felt like it was good. Now, ultimately, it seems like you had the better team, but the process felt like it was good, which is a coaching benefit. And your players felt like they gave you everything that they could have, which is usually something that you attribute to the coach. So all things considered, I think this is a good place to be.
And here's the combination of the reactions that you were kind of talking about. And one of these quotes is going to stick around for probably the next, I don't know, 10 years, maybe forever. From the 214, Jason Kidd's doing just fine. From another 214, I love Jason Kidd. He'll bring us another championship. From a 210, I was out on J. Kidd at first, but getting this team to play defense similar to the 2011 team, I'm all on board now. And then from another 214, man, look at 214 showing out this morning. Nobody's dying. And like, that's the quote that I think is going to be associated anytime something goes bad, but it could have been worse, I guess.
What's the thing that we... And every player we've talked to that has played for Bochy What's the thing that they say about him?
He's always calm.
Steady.
Yeah.
Just like all those words are, he doesn't overreact to stupid things. And he doesn't overreact to a lot of things in general. The only time we saw him like blow up last year, Kevin, was Will Smith and Jonah Heim didn't throw a pitch that they wanted to be thrown, and he got rocked, and he was ticked off because they weren't supposed to do that. And then he got texts, and people were like, "Are you okay?" And he was like, "Yeah, I guess so."
But what did he even reference? I love that he brought that up. He goes, "I didn't know it was a problem until people started texting me."
But then you know, you talk to him about it. I really wanted to hear. I loved his answer at spring training this year because I've been just so curious about this. And I was like, "Why are you the way you are?" And he said, "Well, you know, I had a coach that would rip my butt a lot." And I didn't like it, and I didn't perform my best whenever I had that coach. I performed better with this other perspective, so I tried to be more like that, and it's worked out for me. And so, like, all his knowledge and everything. So maybe that is, whenever we freak out that Jason Kidd's not out there losing his mind about something, he understands. I mean, having played as long as he did, getting his championship, being as successful of a player as he was, maybe he sees something that us just regular people don't see.
Look, there's a lot of things at play, and I already see some people texting in saying they don't like the timing because what happens if you either lose in this series or maybe even get swept
again,
in this series?
You got a young team that's together and a coach that they're playing with.
And I think that's a question that's worth asking because I think we've established kind of the baseline benefit of Jason Kidd. I think one of the concerns for a lot of folks is, can he coach with the best of them? Because yeah. I think that's the place where your team is now going. You're no longer in the place where you're contending to make the playoffs. You want to be a contender that's trying to win championships now, especially with the stars and the timeline that Luka Doncic is on. I think that ends up being the question, and that could be frustrating if you get to a place where you're now amongst the contenders and not showing up in a big way.
Can I throw something out for you,
Please
then?
Please do.
If he can coach with the best of them, to be determined, right? Sure. Like, obviously, I'll have a better answer for you in a week and a half or 2 weeks. Maybe I'll have a great answer for you in about 5 or 6 weeks. But is he the guy who's going to get the best of the best out of Kyrie? Because I did see somebody text in and they said, admit that when he got here, y'all were skeptical about Kyrie working long term. And I absolutely was skeptical about Kyrie working long term, just because you'd seen some of the flameouts he'd had at different places. Obviously, Boston immediately jumps to mind, but long term, he's had an issue in a couple of different places. But I wonder right now, and you might still argue, we haven't seen long term with Kyrie. I don't know what different people's definitions of that is, but right now, to Corey's point, it feels like the team is gelling at a time when you have time to continue to stay with this group. But I wonder, we'll see if he can coach among the best of the best, but has he already proven that he is the absolute best person or one of the absolute best people to get the most out of your second most valuable asset?
I think absolutely. Absolutely, 100%.
That's a big deal then.
Interesting.
Agree.
You do think he has.
Yeah, for sure. Like
I do too.
And if, it's not all Jason Kidd because some of it is Nico Harrison. Some of it is just like the Dallas environment.
For sure.
But Jason Kidd and very in particular, like there is, you know, very personal ties there, right? Obviously, Jason Kidd was and probably still remains Kyrie's hero when it comes to playing basketball. There's a level of respect that is had there from him and also Luka Doncic. I don't want to lose that, but obviously we're focusing on the Kyrie aspect of it. Kyrie has stepped up into a role as leader guy that it seemed like he had been, you know, kind of grasping at for a while, but he's really settled into that matters. There's a lot of ways in which Jason Kidd has also given him the right freedom, knowing that role, having played it, to be able to work with him on a very one-to-one level. It feels like that this is a hand-in-glove fit when it comes to your superstars. And coming back to what we talked about, building your teams and understanding how to accommodate your superstars almost might be the biggest part of being an NBA team in the modern era.
I also wonder, too, and I don't know how much I've talked about this on air, but I know I've talked about it off air a lot. How much, when Jason Kidd had discussions with Kyrie about the team and what his vision for it and everything was, hey, and this goes to the line, Kevin, that I tweeted about on Twitter on Sunday and on Saturday. We talked about it. Jason Kidd said Kyrie's teaching these guys how to be pros. And I think that's Luka, too. His and Kyrie's relationship together, I think, you know, you recognize, look, I'm the coach, and yes, I'm the coach, but that doesn't mean Luka respects me or any of that stuff. I'm still having to earn his trust. You're a teammate. You prove you belong out there with him. You're going to earn his trust. But you, along the way, I do kind of need you to help grow him to be a superstar professional. Not just a guy who's going to show up and do this and that. Now they're showing up at practices they don't belong at together. They're doing all these extra
things,
doing the extra work. And that's where I do wonder if Jason Kidd was like, recognize, look, I'm the coach, and I'm not going to be able to connect the same way. But Kyrie, I need you to help nurture this along, because there's a lot in this player. There's a lot of potential, even further than what he is right now, and we can really maximize with it.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Buckets with Corey Majors.
Oh, man, John Gray just going out there and being the beast we know he is.
What if he came on our show?
Oh, he will. Yeah, next on The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. Gotten a lot of great suggestions for guests or perhaps guest hosts.
Name one.
To have Jeff Kavanaugh.
All right. Name two.
Colby.
Colby's a really, that's a good one too. Name three. We have Reggie. Can he be
Marty
a guest
Turco.
Host?
No, I mean, Reggie is here.
Yeah.
He's on the show.
He's guest
not
host.
A guest.
He's guest host.
He's on the show, though. I guess if you want to qualify it like that.
I like when Reggie's on the show. I enjoy it.
I very much
877-881-1053. If you think that Reggie is a good fit with our show, let me know.
What's the number again?
877-881-1053. What are you going to text? Are you going to say yes or no?
No, I think Reggie's a great fit with her show.
Okay,
I know what he's doing, because it's that one time, what was that, last week when I sent him an email?
Oh, it was.
He's going to return the favor.
He said, your opinions are trash.
Oh, man, I remember that.
Right now, it's time for Baseball Buckets with Corey Majors.
Your attention, please. Ladies and gentlemen. Now batting with Baseball Buckets, Corey Majors.
Buckets.
Thank you very much, Chuck Morgan. The Rangers over.
Wait a minute.
What?
You have to let the people know that Baseball Buckets is brought to you by Twin Peaks.
That's right.
Eats, drinks, and scenic views.
Thank you, Reggie.
You're welcome.
That's why you're good.
Well, actually, I didn't do anything. That was Twin Peaks that did it.
That's a good point. I'm going to have to remember.
Twin Peaks has good food. Really good food. All right.
And drinks and scenic views.
What do they mean by scenic views?
If you've ever been to the one at Mockingbird Station, it sits a little bit higher, in like on the second
floor.
The
scenic views, you're saying?
No, the restaurant itself is on a second floor. And if you get to the patio, you can see the Mockingbird Station area. So I think that's a scenic view. The one out in Fort Worth, Kevin, we were out there right next to it the other day. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember being here for an event one night. And this is a really great, it's a great view. You got a good shot of the highway, but also like the way that it's laid out. The patio is real fun. So I think that's
Has
what
that ever
mean.
Been said once? Like, oh man, great view of the highway here from this location.
I think of that at our building sometimes, but I understand why you would say that, like with the sarcasm built in. I get it.
Over the weekend, I was shocked whenever because Kevin, Saturday, we'll talk more in the C block about what we did on Saturday. But on Saturday, I was very like caught up in everything, so I didn't get to watch the game and pay attention to the game enough. And I had texted Mike, and I was like, hey, Mike, can you give me a breakdown on what happened? And he said, Wyatt got hurt. And I was like, that was it. That's the only response I got from him. And I was like, thanks, man. So I figured, you know, well, I better look into this just a little bit. But Kevin, they scored 15 runs without hitting a home run.
That's crazy.
And I don't know how that came about. Like, I don't know how, I'm so used to, if you're going to score that many runs, you're doing it with some home runs mixed into it. But man, they did have a couple triple or a triple and a couple doubles. when you're hitting doubles into the gaps and you have runners on, you're going to be okay. So Rangers get that win over the weekend, 15-4, and in a way that I just didn't anticipate would happen. So they can do it that way, and if that feels like it's small ball, or if it feels like it's generating runs, or what did you say, building innings?
Building innings.
If that's the case, man, then I'm perfectly fine with that. If you find out what your team's good at and do it, just like last year when Bochy said, why would I steal bases when I got guys who can crush? If they get thrown out at second, then I'm losing a run there, a potential run. So whatever my team's good at, we'll be good at that.
Corey, can I hijack this segment for a short moment?
Oh, absolutely.
If you could only have one, just like a team that hits solo homers or a team that stacks base hits to the point of like building a 2-run or 3-run inning, which would you rather have? Because I feel like for me, it's absolutely the latter.
Redistribute what you just said?
Like the idea of just solo home runs, mm-hmm. right? Just that power.
I want runners on base.
Yeah.
I always have.
I think I'm the same way.
And Kevin, I've been adamant about this for a while. You get a runner on first base, the pitcher has to think about the runner on first base.
Sure.
And now the pitcher's not paying as much attention to home plate, and he's having to think about that guy over there. Is he going to steal? Man, how do I keep that run off there? And so you can even your entire approach at the plate can be adjusted to that. But it's more exciting when the ball's in play, too. A home run is exciting for that moment. Whenever guys are on and things are happening, lots of more fun baseball gets played, in my opinion.
Is it odd to you, or I guess in this specific situation, I guess it's kind of good, that the loss of Wyatt Langford isn't as crippling as like you would have guessed at the beginning of the season? Like, he's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks, and I'm just kind of like, man, that sucks. But at the beginning of the year, it felt like we were primed for, oh, my God, no.
Uh-huh.
Like, you just lost another Corey Seager or something like that.
Yeah, and he hasn't turned out. If he had looked like Corey Seager, and if Corey Seager had looked like Corey Seager, we all might be sitting there going, oh, my gosh. But I think we all feel like we're wounded ducks, just kind of figuring it all out right now. Is that the feeling? Like, everybody feels hurt except for Marcus Semien. And, like, that feels like it's the only player that's healthy. And Jonah Heim. Even Jonah Heim had to take some, it was a bereavement for about a couple days. So there's all this going on. I'm glad Nate Lowe's back, and he looks like he's back into a little bit of a groove early. I'm happy with that. So the injury part of it all is kind of terrifying. But, yeah, Wyatt Langford being out, maybe it will be good for him. I feel like that's the first thing I thought, was maybe this will be good for him to kind of reassess, reevaluate, tinker with his swing a little bit. But also, if you're dealing with hamstring, you have to do your rehab work there too. So don't overwork it, but also work hard enough to keep both things going on. So that's what we're looking at there. The other thing though, Kevin, is we've been terrified of pitching for a while now.
Yes.
And starting pitching in particular. And I'll be honest on this. I didn't see enough of Dane Dunning's outing to know, was he out after 4 2/3 because the score was already 7-whatever, and they were like, all right, we're going to run away with this game, or was he out because...
I don't think it was that, because if you get one more out, then he qualifies for the win. I know wins and losses don't matter as much, but they matter.
Yeah, so maybe that's what was going on. But a couple days ago, Lorenzen was out there, and Kevin, he gets out there, and he told Kisner in the bullpen session, just set up middle for me. During his warm-up, he was like, I'm missing everything, and I don't want to spend too much time trying to hit my spots. The line was, I told him, if we go out there and you set up middle for me, I feel like in the fourth inning I'll have like 35 pitches tonight. Otherwise, if we went out there and I'm trying to hit all my spots, we might be in the fourth inning with like 90 pitches. So it ended up working out, but that just comes with experience, knowing who he is.
Right.
And so he knew, I don't have it today, so set up middle, and that's going to give me, I'll pitch around that. It's going to give me a better opportunity. But if I'm trying to hit corners, we could have some walks on our hand and some things that don't work out the way you want. And that being said, he goes out there and has a productive night for you. And then the Rangers, they turn it on a little bit. And then yesterday, John Gray gets out there against the Royals. And John Gray, I love this line. After allowing, this is from Jackson Stone on MLB.com. After allowing his second run of the game in the third inning, John Gray made manager Bruce Bochy a promise. The quote, that's it, they're not scoring anymore. He walks into the dugout and looks Bruce Bochy in the eye and says, they're not scoring anymore, and then they don't. And it's like, oh, like that's the John Gray we've been asking for, right? Like, that's the dude we've been sitting there going, be that guy, be confident in everything you're doing. And over the last, what, two or three outings now, since he went into that bullpen, Kevin, he's come back out and he's like, I'm going to show you guys what's up, giving up one, and two earned runs in his last three outings.
In that look, the track record right there that you just brought up probably helps believing what your pitcher's telling you. But if your pitcher straight up looks at you and says they're not going to score any more runs, do you feel like you kind of have to give them the benefit of the doubt?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Okay.
It's kind of, it does remind me, there's that moment where Dirk, the line from Brendan Haywood was, he saw the video on a tablet in the airplane of LeBron and Dwayne Wade. I think it was Brendan Haywood that told the story, and he just closed it and said, that's okay, I'll take care of it. And then just went out there and did, and it's because that's who Dirk is. So, but the John Gray thing, like, I'm very excited because, Kevin, at a time where we're like, oh, crap, we're losing this guy, we're losing Nate Eovaldi, we're losing this, John Gray's giving you good outings. Michael Lorenzen's giving you good outings. And so yes, seeing that these guys are still coming along, and then from the 3-2-5, Dane was hot for three innings, then struggled in the fourth. So that's what that was there, and I appreciate that because I was, like I said, we were very, very busy over the weekend. But here's a line, Kevin, at the very end of this, from Jonah Heim. And I don't know how I feel about this because I there's part of me that's like, I love hearing that because we just said with John Gray. But here's Heim. If we get shut out through seven, you better watch out the eighth because we're going to come out hot and give you some good at bats. There's never any panic. And I'm like, why don't you give good at bats in the first? You know, like, are you saying that you didn't, if seven innings, you're like, we took it easy.
Does that kind of sound like the Nuggets coach a little bit when he was like, hey, what the crap in hell do we keep getting off to these rough starts at the beginning of the game? Do we not know what's going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I mean, I think he's just saying, look, man, we don't like being pinned down that long, so you just better be aware. And then to finish this all off, Kevin, guess who's pitching for the Kansas City Royals against the Brewers today?
Bobby Wood Jr.
Cole Ragans. Oh. So we did miss Cole Ragans.
He typically doesn't pitch, Kevin. Yeah. I don't know if you knew that.
I mean, if he really wants to be MVP in the American League, you look at recently.
Yeah.
History says.
To be able to pitch in addition to be able to hit.
And that is baseball nuggets, everybody.
Buckets?
Well, for, yeah, you know, Twin Peaks purposes.
Ah, okay, yeah.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's do some Wanker of the Weekend. Who was the best at being the worst this weekend, and why was it AC joints? We'll do it next right here on The Fan.